What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks. Get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. Cheers, cheers. Clink, clink. We engage you, the listener, and interact on a different topic each week. We've got loads of good tunes, lovely music, and lots of analysis to keep you going.
And interviews from experts or you young people telling us what you think about our daily topic.
That's always the best part of the show, Jackson, to hear what the listeners have to say. There's always lots of juicy comments and lots of different perspectives. Absolutely,
so stay tuned. Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Now, reading is as old as a human activity as writing is. Dating back to around 4 millennium BC, reading has always been the primary process for people accessing and distributing information. History has shown us that when people read, they become active contributors to the process of change in their communities. And this change can manifest itself in how communities evolve, whether socially or politically. Nations of a reading society, or in this case, a literate society. This is evident in the economic advantage and progress that some countries have over others. But economics aside, reading is a very important element in the preservation of a society's history and culture. In societies with a history of oral dissemination of information, like many on the African continent, the knowledge industry has less capacity to store and distribute information. There's also a likelihood of altogether losing the part of the knowledge system or even other people taking credit for it. We've had a conversation on this show about indigenous knowledge systems and information systems that have progressively been lost over time, and in some cases where people have taken credit for some of our inventions and ideas that are historically African in nature, you know, in fields like science, in medicine, and things of that nature. But the basic reasons for reading is that it opens up the mind up to a whole new world of imagination and creativity. And so reading should be promoted and encouraged by any society because it's necessary for any community as they go through change to create new ideas, to evaluate, to imagine, to reason, and most importantly, finding solutions to local problems. So as we begin today's discussion, I want to ask, how often do you read? Stay tuned. This is Upfront on the Voice of America.
African revolution must be black people redemption.
So in Kenya, we have the culture whereby people are listening more to the radio than the newspapers, since the newspapers are only maybe for the elite, those who are able to afford. Otherwise, for most Kenyans, the radio is the most type of way of communicating, a way of listening to music, and more so the Kenyans, they love music so much, they love sports so much, so they use the radio more often as compared to the newspaper.
No, I don't really read every day, just because I don't have much time. People don't have the culture of reading just because they first look for money before having time to read something.
Cameroonians prefer TV, dancing, instead of read a book because they don't have time for that. It is difficult to sit down and read something. They prefer going out.
Cameroonians don't read enough, perhaps because you don't have enough libraries, perhaps because people do not have enough money to buy books or newspapers.
No, I don't read every day because I don't have enough time. I wake up too early and I go back home too late.
This is Kobe Maxwell. You are listening to Upfront.
My name is Jane Akoth Onyango from Kisumu. I do read every day, and I read materials like magazines, for they update me. I read Bible to strengthen my spirit. So I always read every day. There is reading culture in Kenya because if you visit places like library in the morning, you'll find people have already occupied all the seats. So it means people are reading. And if you pass along the streets in town, you'll find people are reading magazines. So there is reading culture in Kenya. In western part of Kenya, people listen to radio more than reading because there are many radio programs, and with the FM station that is available, people find many radio programs than reading materials, which are expensive if compared to radios. You'll find that every home has a radio, while reading materials will not be available.
I'm Samson Ogalo from Kisumu. I usually read every day. There is a reading culture in Kenya, and that one started long time ago. People usually read, and I can encourage people to read more because through reading, you can learn more about other people's culture, even though nowadays you have got different ethnic groups. People usually listen to radio more than reading because some people are not able to go to school, and radios are readily available. People usually read about other people's culture and also their culture.
My name is Oscar Gode. I read newspapers more so at lunchtime to get the current news and also the sports news. It encourages me to know more about the world and also to know more about sports. Yeah, there's reading culture in Kenya. Kenyans like reading the newspapers to get the sports. Also, they like to get information about the everyday, the politics, and we have so many newspapers. They like also to do research, getting more about the vacancies in the newspapers, and also about the burials, normally people who are dead, and also, in short, there's normally a reading culture in Kenya to know more about the world.
Many agree that in many African societies, access to books is often difficult and limited and expensive, and only a few people can afford to buy a newspaper, much less a textbook. Textbooks are very expensive.
One of the tenets of a developing nation is a well-read people. We need to read so that we are in the know of things, to be informed and to understand what is going on around us. We've seen that in some countries, people read more than others. So the question we want to ask is reading part of a society's culture?
Across the African continent, we see that much of our culture is ingrained in an oral tradition of passing down information. There's an argument that some societies actually read more than others. So I reached out to Rama Isibo, an avid writer and reader in Kigali, Rwanda, to find out his take on this.
We really come from like an oral culture, but in our oral culture, it never translated to eventually translated into a written culture, but it was held mostly in the church and among like administrative people, and like most of our population was left illiterate, so they ended up making it a situation where most people got their news through the radio, and news was read out to them on the radio. And this culture has continued till this day, where you get someone just listening to someone reading a newspaper on the radio. It's the laziest thing you could imagine. Someone just picks up the newspaper from the first page to the last page, over 2-3 hours, you know, just reading the news. And that's how people get their news here.
So radio has made people lazy about reading. You mentioned that you are grounded. Your culture is very grounded in oral tradition, and that there has been very little effort to transition into the written part. But this is something that we see in other parts of Africa, say Uganda, where reading is very popular.
No, I mean, when I said that our culture never really translated into a written one, is that I'm trying to say that just our culture, the way it is, I mean, our body of knowledge, our historical culture, where we came from, it was never truly written down and understood in a written form. It was kept in kind of oral tradition. And even when our language was devised in how it's written. It was done in a very cumbersome way, and Kinyarwanda is a very hard language to read. It's a hard language to understand unless you were born and bred in it. So, I mean, just the way the words are structured is very long, and it, you see most other cultures, they, when you have a written culture, they kind of develop a shorthand and faster way of communication and everything. So, I mean, apart from like our script and how our language translated, there are so many other problems.
That was Rama Isibo in Kigali, Rwanda. This is Up Front on the Voice of America with Jackson Bunganyi and Nadia Sami. We're talking about reading, the culture of reading. Nadia, let me bring you here in the discussion a little bit. What would you say drives people's reading habits in general?
Jackson, I think a lot depends on whether your parents or your caregivers, whoever raised you, if they were ardent readers, I think you're going to be an ardent reader too. I think that if your parents read the newspaper, if the newspaper was always in the house, or if you always went to the library, your parents or caregivers went to the library and took you along and chose books together, if you saw your parents reading, then you will be a reader too. I think that that culture and that just that nurturing, that love of reading is inherent on the caregiver or the parent.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Adina, and I love listening to Jackson and Nadia on Upfront every Wednesday on The Voice of America.
Hey, what up? This is Katori, and I always make sure I tune in to Upfront with Jackson and Nadia every Wednesday on VOA.
I've spoken to many people who say that when you open a book, you enter a whole new world, a whole new universe. And for Bisila Bokoko, founder of the Bisila Bokoko Africa Literacy Project, her introduction to the African continent as a young diaspora kid all the way in Spain, where her parents had migrated. So after visiting a couple of times Ghana, she decided that she would set up libraries around the continent. Bisila, welcome, and thank you for speaking to us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
Bisila, can you tell us about the Bisila Bokoko Africa Literacy Project and when you started it?
Well, I started 5 years ago when I had my first experience in Africa. My family comes from Africa, but I was born in Spain. So for many years, even though I was connected to Africa through books, and I knew a lot about Africa, I was not having the opportunity to just visit. So my first trip to Africa was to Ghana in 2009, and it was really a magical trip, and many things happened that led me to this direction. I was honored to be the Queen Development Mother of Kokofu in Ghana.
Okay.
And my gift to the community was to provide them with a library.
Why did you feel like it was important to give them a gift of building a library?
Well, because I was actually very interested in the culture, basically different ways of living, and I just explored different universities, spent a lot of time speaking with different children in different schools, and I saw that it was a lack in books. So that was my idea, and also because my relationship with books has been always very interesting since my childhood. I always love to be in libraries, and I think that in a lot of ways, this was my call. I just listened to my inner self, and that was the direction that I took.
Well, tell us a little bit more about your relationship with libraries and books in general. What role did they play in your life growing up? You grew up in Spain, is that correct?
I was born in Valencia in Spain, and I studied in Madrid. So you could imagine, Spain is not a country that receives so many immigrants from Africa. So my parents arrived in the 70s, and I grew up in Spain being the only African kid in the classes, in the university, in my job. So I think since I was 6 or 7 years old, my parents gave me books about Africa, and that's how I built my relationship with Africa, and I was proud of my roots. Could not deny that part of myself, but I needed to just go and see it by my own, not only through books. But I think I traveled to Africa many, many times before through books. And also because my father has a great love for books also, and since I was 6, he told me, okay, you have to stop to read just comics or magazines, and you have to start to reading serious books. So he gave me the biography of Kwame Nkrumah, Jomo Kenyatta.
And you feel that where you are in life right now is very much a product of having been exposed to books from a young age.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the books give you the opportunity to dream with your mind first, also give you the self-confidence and open up your mind to ways that I think that like a child you might not realize. But with the years, I just came to the conclusion that without doubt, that books was really part of my openness to success and to be fearless, about to just do whatever I want.
Thank you very much. Basila Bokoko of the Basila Bokoko Africa Literacy Project. Up front on the Voice of America, this is Jackson Vunganyi. On the phone with me all the way from Cape Town, South Africa, is not Nadia Sami, who is in Joburg right now. It's Tambo Ndlovu.
Jackson, thank
awesome.
You for having me.
Hey, Tambo, so nice to connect with you. Based on some of the work that you've been doing on the continent, how much reading do people in your community do?
There's a lot going on. There's the amazing literary giants that have come from the continent. We've got such an incredible history, particularly, in countries like Nigeria, Kenya, Zimbabwe, South Africa, storytelling. So it's really part of our DNA. And people are reading. I think there's always, I guess one always has to ask, how much and could one always improve. So I think there's always room for improvement.
Now, there's been people who say that this generation, young people, the millennials, are not avid readers because they are distracted by, they have so many things that distract them, technology, you have cell phones, you have TV and all these things.
True. I mean, there's definitely a shift from print and paper to the digital space. I think it's an important move. It's just the signs of the times. But I don't think it negates people actually reading text. I think a lot, I feel like there's a lot more people writing, a lot of young people are writing. Even if it's, albeit, shorter than in previous years, but people are getting, very engaged in what I call sort of thumb consula,
okay,
on mobile phones, where they are, actively writing little thoughts. We know of a platform in Cape Town called Funza, where young people are writing whole books, whole chapters, just on their mobile phones. So it's a totally different
era. That's amazing. That's amazing. And so you're saying that even if they're not reading full novels or books, so going to the library, that it's equally important to be able to access information on their little mobile phone, so long as they're reading something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's different things that appeal to different people. So you've got people who are visual, people who are, they're sort of more drawn to the literary world. And they're those who are audio and more visual people. So I totally agree that not everybody needs to be a reader as well. There's different ways of accessing information. And I think we need to be able to provide more acceptance, for different ways of learning.
Okay. Now
and engaging the world.
You're part of an outfit called Talking Head, part of the Africa Center. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what you guys do?
Sure, Jackson. So Talking Heads is a knowledge sharing platform based in Cape Town, South Africa, although we also work in the digital and the global space. Essentially, we started off with live events that basically draw in and pull in thought leaders across different industries to speak about their big ideas. Anywhere from fashion to business to engineering, we pull in people to share ideas and just like a 10-minute share with members of the public. It's a very energizing space. We call it speed dating for the brain. Post these events, we try and record our thought leaders in short audio casts as well that we then post on our website. So it's just a great way to be able to tell the stories of the continent. We feel that there's still a strong myopic view of our potential on the continent, and so we just want to tell a more full and complete story.
Does that play a little bit into our oral culture of telling stories?
Absolutely. I think we've really taken just the history and the tradition of storytelling just onto a digital platform and into sort of a more formal event space. But nothing that we're doing is really something that is new to Africans. Like you said, we have this very rich oral culture and oral tradition, and we're just sort of, I guess, spinning it around a little bit.
Speed dating for the brain, huh? Interesting.
Absolutely.
You've
got to come to Cape Town. We're wanting to go across the continent, though, Jackson. We have a heart and a desire to take talking heads to Nairobi, to Accra. We're always challenged a little bit with our purse strings, but we keep pressing.
What do you think technology has done to the ability of African storytellers to curate the information, knowledge?
I think it's fantastic. I mean, I'm continually in awe at sort of the new space that we're in. I mean, I must say, personally, I've always been a little bit reluctant as an artist, to go the technology route. But it's really the way of the future, and I think it really just opens up our audiences and opens up our footprint. And now, I can be here in Cape Town, and you're there, in Washington and have this conversation and be able to also touch other people in Sweden and in Australia, all at the same time. So it's just really opened up the pot, and it's able to also increase just also the level of knowledge and sharing. I mean, the quality, there's a greater demand, I think, as more knowledge is disseminated. There's a greater demand to be able to increase the quality of that knowledge.
Thank you very much. Tambo Ndlovu of Talking Heads and Africa Center in Cape Town, South Africa. Tambo, thank you very much for speaking to us.
Thank you so much, Jackson. I really appreciate the call. And just encouraging all of our readers to check us out, and listeners rather, at www.talkingheads.org.za.
I think Cameroonians do not read.
To encourage people to read, I think it may begin by TV programs and cultural events in our country based on reading.
Okay, by opening first libraries. It will encourage people everywhere, I say everywhere, in every town, and it will be free, so it has to be free. And maybe do like campaigns, I think it could be a possible solution.
It can be encouraged by the creation in different municipalities of libraries. Second, they can organize a kind of competitions to enable people to compete in readings. Another solution is to try as far as possible to make people have access to newspapers and books in appropriate price.
It's very important to read, first to know what happens around us, and I think it's important to read just to keep maybe the vocabulary part of something. And reading is a passion, but it's also it's a way of living. In Cameroon, people are not very fond of reading. They will rather watch TV or listen to a radio program.
You can tell about a country's reading culture or patterns from the number of newspapers you find on the streets each morning when you're driving through the city or you're walking through the city. And one of the things that I wanted to find out is readership high enough in countries, in African countries, that it can sustain a newspaper business without
any type of external help, and I'm talking about government help, government intervention. I reached out to Daniel Kalinachi. He's the editor of the Monitor newspaper in Kampala, Uganda. If you didn't have corporate sponsorship and advertisements, would you be able to survive with just income from readers?
In a way, it's a bit hypothetical in the sense that you can't really know how much money you'd make and how you'd need to change your overhead. But there is a background to it. In the mid-90s, a few years after the Monitor had been started, the government of Uganda asked its departments and agencies not to advertise in the newspaper. And so a couple of years, I think about 5 years, the newspaper did not have any advertising from the government. Now, in Africa, the government is actually the biggest business. And if you don't have government advertising, it makes a significant indent in your bottom line. So the fact that the newspaper was able to survive then is a testament to the notion that if you're popular amongst your readers, if your readers identify that you're useful to them, they'll probably support you even in the face of attempts to kill you. Now, whether that would happen today with alternative sources of information, in other words, people can still get information from their mobile phones, from the internet, from radio, from TV, I am not entirely sure, and quite frankly, I wouldn't want to carry out that experiment with my newspaper.
And you said that the government kind of cut off these advertisements to your paper. Was that some sort of punishment because of what you had written?
It was punishment because the newspaper, when it started, was fairly critical of the things that it thought the government was not getting right. And we're talking about, you know, early 90s. The newspaper started in 1992. This was only 6 years after the government had come into power. And there was no opposition. Political parties were banned. So the paper became, you know, the de facto opposition. It was the only institution that could, in a sustained and, you know, deliberate manner, be critical of some of the things that were happening within the government. So the government then decided to withhold advertising in the hope that this would either stop the newspaper from being critical and have it adopt a more positive, more supportive editorial policy.
Now,
or otherwise, then kill it and you know, just get it out of the way.
Could that also have worked in making it popular, the publicity in its own?
I think so. And the guys who were running the newspaper were quite smart in being very forthright and open about the decision and going to the public and saying, look, the government has cut advertising. They are unhappy with the things that we're saying. We think we have a legitimate right to say these things because they're important to you. And that helped kind of bring readers closer to the newspaper because they saw it as their newspaper. And I like to think that there were people who perhaps would not ordinarily have bought the newspaper but felt inclined to do so just to keep this alternative voice alive.
That was Daniel Kalinachi of the Monitor newspaper in Uganda.
Jackson, some people say that even though the internet has brought us all this access to information at such a speedy pace, it still does not encourage reading.
Well, also, Jackson, the internet gives us so much information at the tip of our fingers that it's sometimes, many times, it's too much information. It's information overload. There's a very interesting article that anyone can access on the internet. It's titled, "Is Google Making Us Stupid?" And the article basically talks about how our reading habits change because we have access to so much information. It means instead of reading and reading with depth and understanding, we tend to skim articles. No, I do it. You skim the article, your eyes pick up a few words, you think you get the basic idea of it, and you move on. Many people will, even news articles, they click on it, they read the first paragraph, and that's it. You know, we're in this culture of instant. Everything must be instant, and so must our news and reading.
Thank you very much for listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. I would like to thank my co-host Nadia Sam in Johannesburg, South Africa. We would also like to thank all our listeners who contributed to the show this time around. And if you have any questions or comments or want to contribute to the show in future, remember to send us an email at upfront@voanews.com. If you want to connect with me on Twitter, my handle is @UpfrontAfrica. Let's connect again next week, right here, same time. On behalf of my colleague Nadia Sami, my name is Jackson Vunganyi. Goodbye. Yeah,